And we thank Brother Dick for allowing the Lord to use him to edify us and to encourage us in our Christian walk. We're going to hear now from Brother Bob Gray from Kittery, Maine. Comes down from the Nor'easter, right? And Brother Bob was an elder, a witness for 20 years, and I can't wait to hear what the Lord has done in his life. Brother Bob Gray.
Morning. You probably noticed on the program I'm listed as Dr. Bob Gray. Poor Joan fell victim to a popular myth that I'm a doctor. This came about because of my screen name online. And I'm going to talk a lot about being online. First of all, how many online folks do we have here? I know there's a bunch. Look at them all. Great. You know, I told Joan when she asked me for a theme that I wasn't any better at this now than I was in the theocratic school as far as coming up with a theme. And the World Wide Web had a lot to do with my coming out of the Watchtower and coming to Christ. And, you know, I'm thinking about web. You know that old saying, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. And we were all victims of a web of deceit. Yeah. Okay. There we go. Back to the Doc Bob thing. I forgot about that. My screen name online, when I first went online, I was still an active witness. In fact, I was still an elder. And I was talking to all of these terrible apostates online. And I didn't want to use my real name. And I was trying to think, you know, what funny little name. Because people have clever little ones. Tom, Neon Madman, right? what are some of the others? Love Hugs 2, she's here. Sue 2345. I know most of these people by screen name rather than their real names. But back when my nephew was a little kid, he's now 30, but we used to watch The Muppet Show. And there was a sketch on there called The Doctor's Hospital Sketch. And on The Doctor's Hospital Sketch, there was Dr. Bob. And my nephew used to kid me, oh, no, it's Dr. Bob. So anyway, I used that online, and it stuck. And, you know, I actually have witnesses online that take me to task for falsely portraying myself as a doctor. And if you look at my website, it's the first thing I explain. And I say, I'm not a doctor. You know, who was it? Robert Young played Marcus Welby. He used to do that commercial. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. And he goes on and tells you about some kind of aspirin. Well, I'm not only not a doctor, I don't even play one on TV. So now we have that straight. My initial contact with the witnesses came in 1973. That was a huge year for me. That was the year I got out of the Coast Guard. I spent 4 years in the military. I went to the Coast Guard so I wouldn't have to go to Vietnam. That year I first came in contact with Jehovah's Witnesses. I married my high school sweetheart. And we'll be married 28 years this November. Yeah. The first contact I had with the witnesses was a guy that worked with me. We were linemen for a local cable TV company. And I would hear him talking to people about the Bible. And I wonder, what is this guy up to? And he seemed to be studiously avoiding me for some reason. I'd been out of the Coast Guard about 6 months. I had hair down to my shoulders. And unlike today, back then I had this, evidently this drug-crazed look in my eye. So he seemed to be avoiding me, but I sought him out because I wanted to know what he was up to. Now, when I grew up in a Congregationalist church. I really shouldn't say that. I grew up being sent to a Congregationalist Sunday school and really kind of got into it after a while. In fact, when I was 13, 14, I actually thought about becoming a minister someday. And I also went to an Advent Christian church camp on summers. And that was just a real spiritual awakening for me. And, of course, later on into my teens, I get into drugs and one thing and another. And I had really been away from God for quite a while. But I knew all the stories. So this guy, he says, well, you know, I got this little blue book I can give you, you can read. And it was the little blue truth book. I took it home. I devoured it that night. I mean, I read that book. I went, wow, this is it. So I came in the next morning, and Jim, kind of timidly, oh, did you have a chance to look at that book? I says, yeah, man, I read the whole thing. This is really exciting. I'm really into it. He goes, well, you know, we have this study program. I says, well, come on over tonight. And he says, well, I've got this meeting tonight. How about tomorrow night? And he came over. And I don't know what it was that drew me to it so quickly. And it's scary when I look back at it now how quickly I was drawn into it. At that point, it was just a few weeks went by. My birthday was coming up. And he taught me about birthdays. I went right to my mom and dad, told them, nope, no birthday this year, that's it. Nope. Oh, by the way, no Christmas either. And and my girlfriend at the time, my wife, Shay, wasn't real happy about this. And I couldn't figure out why. And it's scary to me, too, to think that I was drawn into it that quickly that after just a few weeks of being involved, I made it plain to her that if she wasn't going to at least look into this, that there probably was no future for us together. And thank God that didn't happen. Thank God. But anyway, she started studying, and she scared poor Jim to death. My wife, was it Dottie, Art used to say about, she is small but mighty. Jim was kind of, he's the guy that studied with me, was kind of scared of Shay at first. But things progressed, and Shay and I were baptized in July of 1974. Yes. 1975, September, I was appointed as a ministerial servant. I was evidently being groomed by a couple of the elders there. The problem was that I did not get into that door-to-door work. And it caused a lot of problems for me, guilt-wise. You know, there was always, I'm not doing enough. You know, and I went to the hall, and I gave my talks, and people would give me studies. Oh, I got this person. You want to study with them? And I enjoyed that part of it. And I really did believe it was the truth. And I enjoyed my time as a witness. I actually did. I really thought that it really was the truth. Boy, did that take me a while to figure out. At one point, I don't know when, it came to me that I had to either really buckle down and pioneer or just forget the whole thing. And I figured I'd pioneer. I had a great job as an engineer in an engineering outfit. I worked for GTE. Good paying job, 5 miles from my house. Couldn't beat it. I decided to give that up to go into a partnership with a brother doing roofing and siding so I could pioneer and work part-time. And at about the same time, one of the elders was kind of taking me under his wing, taking me on studies, getting me out door-to-door. And then I got into it. I says, you know, this door-to-door thing isn't too bad. This is kind of fun. There's a lot of interesting, strange, curious people out there. And so I decided I was going to auxiliary pioneer. I did that for a while. In the meantime, this whole business thing with this brother really went downhill fast. He ended up snorting cocaine, becoming involved with a young lady, skipping town, leaving his wife, his stepson, and his daughter, moved to Ohio with his mom, and he's still there. How many years is that? A lot of years ago. This was 1983. And so I got back into computer work, which I'm still in. So I'm not a doctor. I'm a professional computer geek. But anyway, I decided I would regular pioneer. The same month I started regular pioneering, I was appointed as an elder. And so now, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about myself. You know, maybe I'm finally doing what God wants me to do. You know, I found even as a pioneer and an elder, I still wasn't doing enough. It took me a lot of years to figure out it's not what I can do, it's what Jesus did. And you know, I kid sometimes, you know, it's 22 years in the watchtower, you know, and I liken it to Moses wandering in the wilderness. you know, and I figure I get 18 years off for good behavior. He took 40 years, but toward the end of, I pioneered for the 5 years, stopped that in 1990, and I found people treated me a whole lot differently, even though I was still an elder and still going out in service and doing my talks and all the stuff that elders do, that because I'd stopped pioneering, people treated me a little differently. And I thought that was kind of strange. But shortly after that, things started dawning on me a little bit. I began to realize that more and more of my time and my training as an elder was taken up with administrative things. You know, we'd go to the KM schools they'd have for the elders, and they'd have elders meetings with the circuit and district overseers. And I began to notice more and more of that dealt with legalities and handling judicial matters. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I became an elder to help people, not to be involved in all of this administrative business. On the other hand, I'm thinking to myself, well, this is God's organization, and the only way to really help people is to do things God's way, and this is how he tells us about it. One of the things that really hit me, we went to one KM school, and they talked about confidentiality. That was always a big thing with the elders. You know, you never told anybody anything. And I asked my wife, I never told her anything, but she was great. I'd come home from like a judicial committee meeting, and I'd never tell her that's what it was, but I'd walk through the door, and she says, now, you know, I know you can't confirm or deny this, but this is the way I see this. And 90% of the time, she was just dead on. I'm like, wow, you know, why don't we have one? No. The other thing that dawned on me is that we weren't raising up spiritual people. We were raising up good organizational people. People that could look at the watchtower and figure out what they were supposed to do, but they couldn't look at God's word and make good life decisions. I also realized that they were keeping us too busy to really do real research. You know, somebody online put together this great thing. I should have brought it with me. But he worked out the whole program of study in a year for Jehovah's Witnesses. And between the your kingdom ministry and your, you know, preparing for the school and the theocratic ministry school, the service meetings, watchtower studies and all of that, in a year, there's about 3,200 pages of watchtower material and about 300 pages of Bible reading. So, a 10-to-1 ratio. You know, why do you need to take 10 times as much to explain what God's Word says so well than what he uses to say it in the first place? The other thing that's really started to gnaw at me is I began to wonder, why am I doing all this? You know, I'm on this treadmill. I'm like the gerbil in the wheel, you know, just running like crazy and not really getting anywhere. And I thought, you know, am I doing what I'm doing really out of a love for God? Am I refraining from doing the things that I shouldn't be doing because I love God or because I'm in this organization? And I thought, you know, if I weren't in this organization, what kind of a person would I be? And I've got a dear friend. He's still an elder. We haven't talked in at least 5 years now. But I know one of the main reasons he's still in is because he's scared to death of who he would be if he weren't there. And it kind of bothered me to think that perhaps it was because of the organizational pressure, the group, that I was the kind of person that I was. In spite of all of this, I never would have dreamed of communicating with apostates. It was funny. By then, I was online. I'd be talking to people online, and I think it was on. It was actually way before CompuServe was CompuServe. It was called The Source. I wandered into this room, and there were these two Jehovah's Witnesses doing battle with a former witness. And I actually sent one of them an email and counseled him about that. And said, you know, if you went to the door and somebody gave you that kind of reaction, would you stand there and keep talking to him, or would you leave? And you know, the guy says, well, yeah, brother, you're right, you know, and he stopped talking with this guy. Well, in late 1993, I was on America Online, and I was in a chat room, and there was a guy in there who was obviously an ex-witness. His name is Joey Stagnito, and I haven't talked to Joey in a while, but he made some statement about something, and I jumped right in. I don't know whatever possessed me to do it, but I says, you know, come on, what are you talking about here? Let's have a little backup for this. And we actually started talking. Now, I'm still an elder at this point. After a while, in talking with Joey back and forth, probably a little self-deception, I says, you know, now that I'm talking to one of these guys, I'm going to check out what these guys are really all about, because I know they're phony as can be. And, you know, so I start, and you online folks probably know Kent over, yeah, yeah, Grace knows him. Kent is not a Christian, but a dogged researcher like so many other ex-witnesses that I know. He's got a website that last I knew had 30 megabytes of information on it. Of you know, and if you want to find something else, go to Kent's site. Well, him and another guy named Norm Hovland and Jan Haugland, they're over there in Scandinavia, and talk about being in your face. Wow, these guys, just brutal. And so I get in contact with them and say, going back to the Watchtower, these guys really are the way that the Watchtower's told me. But I continued talking with this guy, Joey, and then I found out that he lives just an hour down the road from me in Massachusetts. And at the time, I was doing a lot of work in Rhode Island, so I wasn't really commuting. I'd go down for a day or two and come back. And Joey's house was, like, on the way. So I was online with him one day, and, you know, I says, I'd like to stop by and meet you. And so we made arrangements to meet at the local Burger King. And I says, you know, while you're at it, why don't you bring a copy of that? You got a copy of that book, Crisis of Conscience? Why don't you bring that with you? I'm still an elder at this point. What was I thinking? this was the fall of 1994 at this point. I took the book home, had it in my briefcase, and we have a little library that's kind of a little loft-type thing off our living room, and the kitchen is way down here. Well, while Shay was down working in the kitchen, I was upstairs in the library surreptitiously reading this book. Now, we had met Ray Franz back when he was still on the governing body in probably about 1978, 79, up in Portland, Maine. And, you know, I started into the book, and I expect to find him breathing threat and fire against us. And I read it, and I went, wait a minute. Where's all the vitriolic hatred I was supposed to see here? It just wasn't there. And then, you know, he talks about Malawi and Mexico, and I said, yeah, I remember that. I remember writing those, you know, everyone was writing letters to Malawi, and at the same time, all this business is going on in Mexico. By the time I finished the book, I realized that I probably could not continue as an elder anymore. Now, up to that point, I had been on probably, it had been 10 years by that, well, 9 years by that point. I had been on every judicial committee there was in that congregation, except for one that I can think of. And I was like the legal eagle, you know. I had all those rules down just perfect. And as Shay said one time just a couple years ago, and she said it the nicest way that anyone can ever say this to you. She said, you know, you would have made a good Pharisee. and she was right, you know. But after reading that book, I says, you know, I can't do this judicial thing anymore because it's totally wrong. You know, it dawned on me, there's no scriptural precedent for this committee arrangement. And so, it was fortunate, too, that I was working enough that I could beg off of this and not attract any attention. And as things progressed, I knew that I was on my way out of the organization. And that was a really scary thing for me. You know, and I'd pray to Jehovah, saying, Jehovah, you know, if that is the truth, smack me upside the head, because I need that. And that particular smack upside the head hasn't come yet, by the way. I've gotten plenty of others, but not that one. You know, and I'd go to meetings, and there was nothing there anymore. You know, it's like the spell had been broken. And the more I went, the more I would see things in the watch, and I'd go, oh, boy, that doesn't fit. Well, I'm still an elder at this point, and I know I've got to step down. I had some situations, you know, I really didn't want to leave people in the lurch at that point, and I was really determined to just kind of slip out of there quietly and not cause a whole big ruckus. And for the most part, I succeeded in doing that up to a point. Let's see. Fall of 1994, kind of a big watershed event for me. I had a job working for Intel out in Oregon. And I went out there, and I always had my laptop with me so I could keep up with what's going on AOL. And by this time, you know, I'm right in the middle of these ex-witness mail groups and all of this. And they were great support. You know, that's one of the beautiful things about the Internet is that, you know, first of all, you can get information that you can't get otherwise. Or you can, but you can't get it easily. And you can get it in the privacy of your own home, so you don't need to suffer the embarrassment of being seen by other witnesses walking out of the local Christian bookstore. You know, that's a problem for some people. But while I was there, there was another guy that was on these mail groups who's also an excellent researcher. His name's Alan Feuerbacher. And Alan's family, as I remember, was good friends with the Schroeders. And Alan's also a kind of in-your-face guy. And by the way, he has a great library. You know, it's one of those libraries you just lust after. You know, Shay and I love books. Her mom was the local librarian when we met. And when you walk into our house, you see books everywhere. But Alan lived in Portland, Oregon. So I emailed him, I said, let's get together. And we get together and get talking. And at the same time, I grew this. I'm still an elder at this point. Now, our congregation was fairly liberal on that type of thing. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I got a perfect out here, because a couple of years before, we had a guy who came into the congregation who had a beard. And the question was raised whether we could let him get baptized or not with this beard. You know? So the elders dispatched me to contact the circuit overseer to find out what to do about this situation of earth-shaking proportions. The circuit overseer read me a letter from the Watchtower Society to circuit and district overseers saying that you can't prevent a guy from being an unbaptized publisher if he has a beard. You can't prevent him from being baptized if he has a beard. And whatever else the local elders want to use him for above that is up to them, but in keeping with local customs. Now, we're from Maine. There's not a fisherman up there that doesn't grow a beard in the wintertime. So I returned home, fully prepared at that point to step down, because I decided, okay, it's time. And also with the beard. Now, before I told anybody that I was stepping down, we had the big discussion in the body of elders about beards. And I recounted this event, and my body of elders, much to my surprise, voted to allow me to remain an elder with my beard. And we had some practical things to deal with. They said, you know, some of the people up north aren't quite as understanding. And I was speaking a fair bit at that point. And what happens if they have a problem with it? I said, you know, the brother that arranges the talk, just let him know. Bob's got a beard. Now, if you're uncomfortable with it, we'll send somebody else. Everything went fine. I actually did give a public talk, conducted the Watchtower study, and did a couple service meeting parts. And, you know, by this time, I am kind of doing this theological dance around everything that I knew wasn't true. So it was tough. And I'm really thankful to God that, you know, that He was always there for me. You know, prayer was just a constant thing through this whole exiting process. And two things I always prayed for, and Shay's heard me pray this 100 times, strength and guidance. You know, God, point me in the direction you want me to go. And then, by the way, give me what I need to get there. And He sure did. And so, We're doing okay with the beard thing. I got a little feedback from some people in the congregation. They weren't too happy with it. And basically, it was all from one family. It happened to be the presiding overseer's family, but that's, you know. So anyway, the circuit overseer shows up, and by this time, I've let the other elders in my congregation know that I'm stepping down at this point. You know, I told them basically I was burned out, which at that point I was. And then I also said, you know, there are some policies that I feel that I can't conscientiously support. And I was trying to tread this thin line of stating my case strongly enough that they'd actually let me step down and stating it so strongly that all the rest of them would go too. But, so we went through the whole process of me stepping down, and then the circuit overseer kind of gently tried to dismiss me from the elders' meeting. He said something of, you know, you're probably not comfortable staying here for the rest of this. And I'm thinking to myself, I wouldn't miss this for the world, because I know you're going to talk about beards. And he got into this whole thing about when, was it Paul and Timothy went down to Iconium and Lystra, and Paul had Timothy circumcised to, you know, for the sake of the Jews. That, you know, he was trying to get into this facial circumcision thing or something. And anyway, he... Yeah, I mean, you know, I was supposed to shave this off so that I wouldn't offend anybody, but nobody was offended. So, and the circuit overseer succeeded in royally angering the rest of the body of elders there. And then, you know, they, when they're done, at the end of the week, they send in a report to Brooklyn about the spiritual health of the congregation. Well, in that, he made this case to have me removed, even though I'd already stepped down. And I remember one sentence, because when I read it, I was just amazed. It says, "Brother and Sister Gray have adopted styles of dress and grooming that are inconsistent with this conservative area." Now, Portsmouth, New Hampshire is the most liberal town up there. The guy totally missed the beam on that. The problem he had with my wife, which amazed me, she was these little ear cuffs. They're really kind of cool. You don't have to punch a hole in your ear to wear them. They just kind of clip on. And that was inconsistent with... So anyway, for the next couple of years, I was just kind of hanging out there doing the ex-witness thing on the web. I put up my website. I was getting email from other ex-witnesses. And there was a great little support community there. We went out to a couple BRCI conventions. I got to meet all kinds of people there, and really enjoyed it. And I kind of felt religiously I was kind of where I needed to be. I felt I was still a Christian, and you know, I believed in Jesus Christ. I'm praying to Jehovah incessantly for help to get through this whole thing. And somebody told me about this convention. And some of them were very positive about it, and some of them were less than positive. Some people had a problem with the whole born-again thing. This is the oldest born-again convention up there. And so there were, I don't know how many of us, we got talking back and forth. I said, you know, maybe we'll go up and check this out, and kind of asking people what it was like. And they said, well, it's nice, you know, it's up in the woods. And we figured, you know, if it gets too preachy, we can just kind of take a walk up in the woods and this type of thing. And Shay came with me, and we came in. It was late Friday. And we walked through the door back there, and the Harveys were leading in music. And I'm just blown away. Just blown away. I see people, hands raised and singing. I'm like, wow, this isn't like the Kingdom Hall. You know, and I hadn't been to any churches at that point. Oh, I've got to backtrack a little bit. I've got to tell you about the two joys. Two ladies named Joy that were just, this was something that really changed my view of what Christians were. One of them is Don Vino's wife, Joy. Now, while I was still an elder, I had read Crisis of Conscience. And I told Shay that I'd read it. And she was understandably concerned. And so we kind of shelved that whole thing for about a year until I stepped down. In the meantime, I was talking with Joy online, and you know, just probably 2 years ago, she had a copy of that original email that I sent to her, and we kind of went back and forth a little bit, and what I didn't know was that she had told the story of this elder that was on his way out to another lady named Joy, and that's Joy Westerfeld back here. And I met Joy online. This is after I'd stepped down from being an elder. I don't know how much later it was. But I got talking with her and said, "Yes, oh, what's your story?" And I said, "Well, I used to be an elder, one thing and another." And she goes, "Oh, you're the one." And it always worries me when people say that because I never know what's coming next. But I says, "What do you mean I'm the one?" She goes, "Well, do you know this other woman, Joy, is, her screen name was Be Joyful, was Joy Fino." And I says, "Yeah." She says, "Well, quite a while ago, she told us about you." And she says, "My Bible study group and I have been praying for you and your wife." That just bowled me over. It really did. Yeah, Ken. And, you know, the more I talked with Christians online, my whole viewpoint changed. And I'd been talking, you know, people were talking about praying for Christ to come into your heart. And, you know, I had a certain view of that back then. But I came here and Dan Hall gave a talk here on the mystery of Christ in us. And I didn't really, you know, and previous to that for, I'm going to say 3 months, I had actually started praying that prayer and saying, "Lord Jesus, come into my," and I couldn't finish it. And I didn't know why. A couple nights later, I'd be laying there in bed praying, and I'd start again, and I couldn't finish it. And then I got to the point where I'd be mad at myself and apologize. I'd say, "Sorry, Lord, no, this isn't the time." You know, so we came here, flash forward again. We came here and joining with this group in song, that whole weekend, I didn't sing very much. You know, I was like Ken, I was just a mess. And I still am. I come here, well, it's a song we were singing last night, just, "Lord, I lift your name on high." Wow. That one still gets me even when we sing it in church. But anyway, so we came here and Eric was preaching Saturday night. And I told Eric earlier, some people warned me about him, you know. He says, he's pretty strong, and you being a kind of a newly out witness, you know, just so you know. So, you know, he started in. I'm like, "Wow, this is pretty cool." And had the altar call, and I was that close. You know, but it was just like, "Lord, no, not time yet." But that night, 4 o'clock in the morning, room 27, Fort Motel, on Route 61, I woke up and I finished that prayer. I said, "Lord Jesus, come into my heart." And wow, I don't know what I expected. And I've heard a fair number of testimonies up here, and I don't know if I expected fireworks or what, but, you know, it wasn't that. It was just an incredible peace. And all of a sudden, my whole view of everything changed. You know, even my wife, you know, we've been together, it's 35 years since we started going together in December, and I just love her to death. And after I came to Christ, a whole new thing happened there, you know? It amazes me. And then I started looking at Scripture. Oh, man. Romans chapter 8. You know, how many times did you read that? You know, people say, "Oh, how do the anointed know that they're anointed?" The Spirit himself, and of course it's itself in the New World Translation, bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. This is Saturday night. Sunday morning is communion. Now, I had taken communion as a kid in church. And for the age I was reasonably serious about it back then. And ex-witnesses, communion is a tough thing because I had 22 years of passing the emblems by. And to actually stop and partake was just an amazing thing. Yeah, Jim and Joy were there, you know. And then after communion, amazing grace. Yeah, I lost it. That was it. You know, and you know, we talked a lot about grace today. What did we call it when we were witnesses? Undeserved kindness. Where was the emphasis? It was always on how undeserving we are rather than how kind God is. And, you know, I used to hate that song, Amazing Grace. And I still, when I hear it on bagpipes, it's still a little much for me. Singing it here, you know, I was a mess too, Ken, so don't feel bad. At that point, you know, I didn't tell anybody about this for 2 weeks. I told my wife, and then I told all my online friends, and I still hadn't been to a church. And I was still real kind of queasy about that whole church thing. Another woman that I know, Donna Elliott, she's not here this year, but she used to go to a church just up the road from me. And she says, you know, when you get ready for it, it's a good place to go. She sent me some tapes. Jim and Joy had us up for the weekend and asked me to give my testimony at the church up there, and I did. And the next week, I went to this church, and Stan Rockefeller was the pastor there. And she said, oh, you really like him. He's a great guy. So I got there, and I see him walking around, introducing himself to everybody, and he comes up to me. Hi, I'm Stan Rockefeller. He's really outgoing. And I says, hi, I'm Bob Graham, Donna Elliott's friend. He grabbed me, big hug. Bob, I knew you'd be here. He says, we've been praying for you for months now. And I was just like, oh, man. And talk about a supportive church. I just can't say enough good about it. There are a couple people in the church who used to study with Jehovah's Witnesses. Stan didn't waste any time putting me right to work, by the way. He asked me, you know, he says, when you're ready, you can give your testimony. We'd love to hear it. And shortly after that, we did an adult Sunday school class on the cults. And that was a lot of fun. And the thing that really struck me was that so many people in the church really wanted to know how to witness to Jehovah's Witnesses when they came to their door. And I thought, this is great. And now every time witnesses call in, anybody in the church, they have to come and tell me about it. And I was going, well, who was it? You know, what do you look like and all of this? A couple of witnesses actually called on the pastor, and he mentioned my name, and they says, oh, yeah, he left just so he could celebrate holidays again. Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm running out of time here. Went through the whole question, do I get baptized again or not? I figured I should. They had baptism in the river where we live at a public beach and boat launching ramp. So I'm like, well, this should be interesting. It's a conservative Baptist church to do the white robes, the whole bit. We're standing down there. Now, witnesses locally don't know what's going on with me at this point. And it had really been on my heart for quite a while to write a letter to them all and let them know kind of where I was. And I had been working on this letter, and I just agonized over this thing. Anyway, I'm standing there. I don't have the white robe on yet. It's kind of over my arm. And I look, and who's coming down the path toward, right at me? The presiding overseer of my old Jehovah's Witness congregation. Now, Russell isn't known for being the most observant person. There's 50 of us standing down there. He walks right by me, goes about 100 yards up the beach, and commences to fish. And he's standing up there fishing while I'm getting baptized. Well, I ended up writing the letter. That was probably December of 19. Yeah, it was December of 1999. And, you know, I kind of vacillated between making it this diatribe against the Watchtower Society and a testimony. Well, the testimony won out. And I really hoped that it would spark some thinking in some of my old friends. And I figured I was a fairly respected elder back then. I hadn't been at the hall for a couple of years at that point. But I hoped that, you know, at least some of them, it would catch their attention. Mailed out 72 copies of this letter to people in 5 different congregations. We mailed it from 2 different post offices, so everyone would get it the same day, so they couldn't call and warn. 2 days later, the elders called. Interesting conversation. This is an elder that I had known for 25 years by now. And he goes, you know, I've been praying, you know, what am I going to say about this? And he says, well, Bob, I got your letter. And out of my, I don't know where it come from, as positively as I could, I said, oh, good, what'd you think of it? I kind of threw him for a loop. He says, well, you know, I was really hurt by it. And I says, well, you know, what is it that hurt you about it? And he kind of mumbled one thing and another, and we kind of went on and on. And I knew that there was another elder on the line, because they would never call me, just one of them. So I says, who else is on the line? The other guy come in. You know, of course, I knew. They wanted to meet with me to face charges of apostasy. I told them I would think about it. A couple days later, I sent them a 6-page legal letter that has been all over the Internet. Several other people have used it. You know, I haven't heard word one from them since December 1999. One real quick thing I wanted to show you. These are ways. Ministry. You know, one of the things I'm glad that Witnesses did was they instilled in me the idea of personal ministry. And I have kind of my online ministry that I talk to other witnesses. It's Baptist Church I'm in. A lot of people ride motorcycles. I love motorcycles. I got my leather vest. Christian Motorcyclists Association. Great group. We got all the pins and stuff on the front. One of the things that they really stress, Christian Motorcyclists Association, I mean, we meet some pretty bad characters. But we're active at all the big bike rallies. We have AA meetings at these. There's no shortage of alcoholics among bikers. Maybe you've heard that. And some really rough-looking characters. But it's amazing. You know, we got one guy, his name is Caveman. And, you know, Caveman, you look at him and you would not think, Christian would not be the first thing that came to your mind. Long, flowing white hair, big beard down to here, and he just loves the Lord. And, you know, I was at a bike rally not too long ago. This big, big, burly biker guy comes up and says, hey, you know Caveman? I'm like, yeah, I know Caveman. Well, he gave me a Bible a while ago. He says, and I read it every day. I'm like, how cool is this? One of the big things that we stress at CMA is meeting people where they are. You know, as witnesses, we met people physically where they were, but we expected them psychologically, emotionally, as far as dress and grooming and every other way to come to us. You know, we expected them to shape up pretty quickly. And, you know, I just thank God that, you know, through the web and every other means possible, that God met me where I was. And this convention, you know, is just such a special time. You know, every time I come here, I think of that first time I was here and coming to Christ. So, and for all you folks online, you know, thanks for your support. And continue supporting one another. Thanks.